VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. And friends, I just want to say at the outset, we have got wonderful guests and topics lined up every day this week. You don't want to miss a single program here on Crosstalk as we deal with so many of the issues that are going on. The news media, certain politicians across our nation, they have been trying to convince us that the wildfires going on out west, along with the hurricanes and tropical storms, are proof of man-made global climate change. Well, our guest today is going to debunk this propaganda, but first we're going to have a thought on the vacancy created on the United States Supreme Court. With us, Craig Rucker, president and co-founder of CFAC, Citizens for a Constructive Tomorrow. Craig, thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
Last Friday evening, I was at the office later, and breaking news came through about the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the second woman appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court. Passed away at the age of 87, pancreatic cancer took her life. But as you know, Craig, a literal firestorm took to the airwaves virtually immediately about this vacancy. We'll be joined by Matt Staver of Liberty Counsel tomorrow, and he's a constitutional attorney. We're going to dissect all that's going on, where things stand in our nation, going in depth on this. But before we enter into our topic of discussion today, Craig, we know the stakes have just been significantly raised higher in this volatile political climate.
Oh, absolutely. It couldn't be any higher, as a matter of fact. You have, of course, going into a contentious election anyway, issues ranging from the race relations and Black Lives Matters to the lockdowns and trying to lift them, and just in general, during this time of year, it's fairly topsy-turvy. But then when you throw into the mix a vacancy on the Supreme Court with a figure as large as Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and the potential to really swerve this court right, you're looking at basically World War III.
Yeah.
There's so many different issues that are impacted. Of course, the ones from the faith community would be dealing with the abortion issue, and if, for conservatives, it might be gun rights. And our particular issue, this court is also extremely important for our subject matter we're going to be talking about later, which is environmental policy and climate.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, there are efforts by those on the left to try to use children's lawsuits, for example, to get people to take action on climate change. The courts have been used to shut down pipelines, like the Keystone XL pipeline,
right,
and things of that sort. There's also been a lot done on property rights, ANWR, drilling in Alaska, what they call the endangerment finding, as calling CO2 a pollution, even things like polar bears and endangered species listing. So there's a lot at stake here, and whether we stay in the Paris Climate Agreement could all be hinge on who it is that's selected to replace this justice. And of course, our heart goes out to the family. She battled her apparent cancer with great courage. And while we did not agree, I will say she was one of the few remaining on the other side that apparently got along great with Justice Scalia and that, and was willing to differ on opinion, but unlike what you see in today's political climate, it obviously didn't take it down to the personal level quite as much as some did.
Craig, President Trump stated that he's going to give his nomination for this vacancy either Friday or Saturday of this week. Mitch McConnell coming under strong fire right now for stating that he'd take a vote, saying he's being hypocritical from his stance of 2016. Any thoughts on that matter?
Well, I can't say I disagree with that statement in a sense, because I do remember that very vividly, that he did not allow. But, of course, it always comes down to politics.
Mm-hmm.
If, in fact, the party in power, whoever controls the Senate, and it was 2016 and the Democrats controlled the Senate, they would have done the same thing. And similarly, if they had controlled the Senate now, they'd be doing the same thing that mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell's doing. It's part of what happens when you're in the political system, and I don't think it's wrong to for Mitch McConnell to do that. Of course not. I think that that's part of to the spoils, to the victor goes the spoils. On the other hand, I can certainly see where some would say that that's going, you know, saying one thing on each side of your mouth, let the election decide. Yet, on the other hand, this time rushing it through would be, in my opinion, something that does leave you open for that sort of criticism.
If Hillary Clinton were in the White House and Chuck Schumer were the Senate Majority Leader at this point, there'd be no doubt in my mind that there would be a nomination going forward there for that seat.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Craig, and by the way, again, listeners, Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel will be joining us tomorrow. We'll be going in-depth on that issue, and we trust you'll be able to join us for that broadcast. Craig, let's talk about the wildfires that have been raging, and virtually day after day, we see the stories coming out that these fires are due to climate change. President Donald Trump is at fault for denying the science. What's your response to these allegations that we're hearing just ad infinitum?
I know, it seems like years ago now that all that you hear in the news is the Supreme Court justice.
But right.
Just as recent as last week, this was actually front page news with the wildfires going, and Biden held a special press conference when President Trump visited out there to basically lay the blame for the California wildfires, but also the ones going on in Oregon and Washington State,
mm-hmm.
not on arsonists, not on any sort of thing of that sort. In fact, didn't even bring up the fact that many natural causes, and these have been going on for distant times past, but seemed to lay all of it to the idea that it had to do with our hair dryers, our SUVs, and man-made emissions, and called President Trump a quote-unquote climate arsonist
mm-hmm.
for not taking action. In truth, to be said is that these wildfires are something particularly unusual. If you look at historical data, going back to the, 1700s, 1800s, estimates are there were in California about 4 to 5 million acres of California were burned every year, and this is a result of nature, just natural causes. This year's burn, by comparison to what it was historically, is about 2 million acres. What we're seeing is that during the 40s and 50s, a lot of the fire prevention measures that went into a place suppressed those early amounts from 4 to 5 million and started putting them down into the few hundred thousand acres. And we were beneficiaries of that as people populated the area. They started clearing the forest, clearing the debris, and you saw precipitous drop in the spread of wildfires. Well, that philosophy changed in the late 1900s, early 2000s, where they just kind of let nature take its course, and now it's going back up to where it was back before Columbus discovered America, you know, back in pre-Columbian times. So in truth, what we're seeing is a return to the massive amounts of wildfires that once, you know, inhabited California fairly routinely. So I don't think that climate change has much to do with this. I think most serious weather people would say that actually the temperatures in California are not going up in some sort of measured way to do that. Drought severity is not increasing. In fact, in general, you will see that the world global fire amounts, just if you take California and all the other wildfires around the world, have actually dropped about 25% since the 1950s. And this is NASA data that shows a 25% in global wildfires over the last 50 years.
Why isn't that making front page news?
Well,
yeah.
I think we all know the answer to that
right,
one.
Right.
Yes, I think it doesn't serve the agenda of the Biden campaign. And interesting, again, Biden doesn't take out any of this is caused naturally. He thinks that all of it is a result of climate change.
Yeah.
And this is something even the UN, which is the biggest backer of the climate change hype, doesn't even agree with him on. The UN IPCC, which is the main scientific body that backs climate science, actually disagrees with him and said there is not clear linkages in many cases from climate change to these sorts of anything from hurricanes to that, but they say that they should start becoming more complex and maybe influencing now, but they're not going to the extent that Biden is saying that this is the reason for the big fires.
Yeah, I mean, and again, he used that term climate arsonist to describe President Trump, and to me, that was just way over the top. We keep hearing with this, Craig, science deniers. That's the term, science deniers, denying science. To those who really balk against man-made global climate changes being the cause for whether it be the hurricanes or the wildfires, what about this aspect of science deniers?
Well, that's I think a deliberate, deliberately done to impugn. They're kind of bringing back the idea of the Holocaust deniers is where that came from, which is highly offensive, especially as I'm going to be going to a memorial service for one of the what we call climate realists or climate skeptics, but we call them climate realists, Dr. Fred Singer, who's a giant in the field, actually developed the instruments that are used to measure global temperature, and he was Jewish. And they called him a climate denier that was very hurtful. So I think that's just done to impugn any scientist that's skeptical of what the Al Gore, Greta Thunberg take is on climate change, and it's just awful. It used to be that the scientific method was one in which if somebody postulated a theory, you would have a bunch of, you'd have a firing squad of scientists shooting at it. If it still remains standing at the end of the day, then it's a good theory. But nowadays, it's they postulate a theory like climate change, and they turn the guns away from the theory, and they look for anybody who's trying to shoot it down, and they shoot them down. So it's like a firing squad looking to silence all those who go against it. And that's why we're coming up with our new movie, Climate Hustle 2, which will be in the theaters. Well, be broadcast worldwide this coming Thursday at 8 p.m. in every time zone around the world at climatehustle2.com, and people can see a lot of these scientists and skeptics that are challenging the paradigm on climate change.
And friends, we'll be giving you more information on that here. So, again, just in review, when we look at the cause of wildfires, many are not pointing. I saw the story, though, Craig, late August. There was these lightning storms going through, estimated 11,000 lightning strikes hit California over a three-day span. Some of the fires started from hot soot from a car's tailpipe. Then you had this family using the smoke-generating pyrotechnic device causing a wildfire. Arson in Oregon, Washington, California, and arrests have been made. Matter of fact, PJ Media pointed out one man started a brush fire with a Molotov cocktail in Portland. They booked him in Multnomah County, and in the jail there, they released him that evening, and he went out to start six more fires before police arrested him again and took him to a hospital for a mental evaluation. These are not making the front page headlines of papers, and then USA Today just references bark beetle that thrives on drought conditions. And saying that they alone, through trees they have killed, fueled 80 to 90% of the Creek Fire's fire, some 2,000 acres or so there. So you've got a lot of things working here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And those are excellent points that you just raised, and especially the arsonist.
Yeah.
Which, you know, does actually even raise other questions, because a Molotov cocktail that he used is eerily reminiscent of those who are with the Antifa outfit. And, of course, you dare raise that and that whole specter as to whether or not some of those involved in those types of antics are actually involved. And, you know, there's reason to be at least suspicious. So, yes, you're correct. And I think that the pine bark beetle, that's a natural issue. You find that as devastated, not just California, but much of the West. These are the types of things that the mainstream media is not interested in looking into, unfortunately.
Folks, we'll be back in 1 minute. Craig Recker is with us today from CFACT, and he'll tell you some more information as well regarding Climate Hustle 2. Back in 1 minute, this is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, does evolution enter into the abortion debate?
It certainly does, Chris. In fact, evolution has long been used as the justification for abortion. Even today in abortion clinics, young pregnant girls are told about an evolutionary concept called embryonic recapitulation, in which the fetus, as it grows in the mother's womb, remembers its evolutionary ancestry. And at one point, it's just a fish. And it's okay to kill a fish, so you can abort in those months. What's the harm? In such a way, many are deceived into murdering their unborn children. But the fetus is a person. Humans were created in the image of God. The human fetus is just not finished growing yet, but it's human in every sense, both scientifically and biblically. So you see, Chris, even modern societal issues go back to Genesis for more understanding.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Recker, our guest here today from Crosstalk. He is president and co-founder of CFAC, Citizens for a Constructive Tomorrow. Craig, for those who've never heard of CFAC before, give us a word about your organization.
Certainly. CFAC's an organization been around since 1985. We work on issues of environment and energy, and have a board of advisors, about 40 strong. We're headquartered in Washington, D.C., and would encourage people to check us out at CFAC.org on any real issue that deals with energy and environment.
Again, that's CFAC.org, and folks, check it out, the letter C, then fact.org, CFAC.org. Craig, Governor Newsom said this. He said, climate change is real. If you are in denial about climate change, come to California. And then he went on to say this. Just today, the President of the United States threatened the state of California to defund our efforts on wildfire suppression because he said we hadn't raked enough leaves. That's quite the sarcasm from someone who's lost control of his state.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. I mean, this is a state that's more interested in whether you have a plastic straw that you drink out of than they are about all the devastation caused by just so many of the things that they've done, from stopping the wildfire spread to the all the stuff they have with the vagrants and that on the streets, and health problems that they have with defecation on the streets of San Francisco. Yep. And drug use. It's been a mess. And, of course, they got blackouts now going and rolling through many parts as they try to implement their own version of a Green New Deal and are decommissioning their nuclear plants and fossil fuel plants. It's been an absolute disaster. But like a lot of politicians, Governor Newsom has two choices to make. And you saw this back with what was called Hurricane Sandy in New York City a number of years ago, or Tropical Storm Sandy is what it really was. When faced with an emergency like this, politicians typically have two choices. One is they can take responsibility for it and say the state should have cleared the forest, should have done the type of forest management that prevented this from getting out of control. That's option A. Or option B, they can blame the citizenry and the President of the United States for not signing the Paris Accord and not taking action on climate change. So guess what they routinely do?
You're right. The blame. Got the blame game going on. You mentioned forest management. What should the state of California or any of these areas be doing that have these large forests? When we mention forest management, what exactly should be going on?
Well, typically what they do is there are several different things they can do. They can put in fire breaks where they just kind of clear certain areas and prevent them from kind of just almost in a sense clear cut certain parts of the forest where they timber and use that timber for positive things. And that is done. Sometimes what they do is clear out and just stack the dead debris. And I've seen that done various ways. I know in, I think it was in Wyoming where I saw a bunch of this done, they were just stacking them like little teepees in places. And finding just means to be able to lighten the fuel load. It could be just paying a paper company or somebody to come in and clear out the debris to just take care of it. So that's or doing prescribed burns where they actually burn part of the forest themselves in order to lighten again. It's all done designed to lighten the fuel load, which means lighten the amount of dead wood and timber that tends to elevate the hazard of a region for major forest fires.
There is quite a machine going on with Facebook right now. Mark Zuckerberg has this new climate science information center that some see this as, well, that's the go-to. If I want accurate information, that's my go-to. But you don't see it that way, do you?
No. As a matter of fact, you know what's interesting about that? I mean, there's different takes on how they do this with this information center. On the one hand, it's annoying because they have brought in people like the climate action folks to populate this thing and be kind of a quote-unquote truth squad whenever an organization like ours puts out information. On the other hand, they don't really have any ability to shut us down. We've run into problems with our movie, for example, trying to put it out on Twitter, where it's been shadow banned, meaning they limit the reach of us being able to advertise or get out our message. And that's pretty bad. But I think in the case of Facebook, though they have this true squad that puts out its information and kind of, as you're looking through various things, puts out its viewpoint, they're not as much stopping organizations like ours from being able to advertise, which I kind of appreciate. They did do that approach for a while. We had a lot of our information that we put out called false information, and we would complain about it, but they had no appeals process. So I'm kind of thinking Zuckerberg, after being hauled before the Congress, came up with this idea as kind of a middle ground, allowing those who are pressuring him in Silicon Valley to take action on this, and they have their little information source that you can just kind of blow off and not pay attention to, but at least they say something and they feel good about it. But as long as they don't have any sort of teeth where they can actually knock out other viewpoints, you know, it's not the worst thing. It could be, I don't appreciate it. We'd like to see it done to both sides, but he's kind of in a tight area where, you know, he's working among kind of the Silicon Valley Hollywood types out there.
Let's transition here to the hurricanes as well, because we're hearing the same kind of rhetoric regarding the hurricanes, Hurricane Sally most recently as well, that this is all due to man-made global climate change, that hurricanes are increasing in their intensity and also in their frequency because of the fact that we have not, gone along with the Paris Climate Agreement and that we've not enacted sweeping reforms here as far as how we deal with the climate and man-made global climate change. What about the intensity and frequency of hurricanes? We're in the Greek alphabet right now. Tell us what's going on. Give us your perspective.
Yeah, I would say that, again, I'm relying on a scientist that, now deceased, Bill Gray, one of the leading climatologists in the world when it comes to hurricane, and Pilkey out of the University of Colorado, Roger Pilkey. Their particular viewpoint is that we are not seeing an increase in either the number or intensity of hurricanes. And certainly we've seen a precipitous drop in hurricanes hitting the U.S. In fact, we had the longest recorded drop in landfalls in U.S. hurricanes. It went about from 2006 or 7, right after Katrina, all the way to 2018, where we didn't even have any that hit the United States. That was a dry spell that was unanticipated, though I kind of anticipated it, because in Al Gore's movie in 2006, he said we'd get Hurricane Katrina's every year. So given that he said it, it doesn't surprise me that it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, we have not seen an increase in either one. I find it curious that they've recategorized what is a Category 3, dropping the wind speeds down a few degrees so that certain hurricanes that might have been considered a hurricane category, 3 or 4, now are 2, 3 and 2. So they played a little bit with the numbers on that. But in general, no. We have not seen any particular increase or decrease in hurricanes. It's been fairly stable. If anything, and this has been put by Michael Schellenberger, who is a former environmentalist, just wrote a book on this, citing this among other issues, he said that there's actually been a decrease in the overall number.
Well,
and same with violent tornadoes.
How do you see, this November 3rd election is fast approaching. What are the implications of this election as you see them, Craig, as it pertains to environmental issues, as to the direction we go as a nation?
Well, first and foremost is something like the Paris Accord. I don't know as though you get a bigger one than that. President Trump, the way the UN had their Paris Accord was that you would have to request to be taken out, and then it took you a period of about 3-4 years before you could officially withdraw. Now, having gone to about 20-some of these UN meetings, this was done deliberately because of somebody, the U.S. election cycle. They wanted to make sure that if they got somebody like Trump, he would have to survive at least 2 terms in order to pull him out. And that's at stake here, because clearly if Biden wins, the U.S. is back in the Paris Accord, which will make something like the Green New Deal a real possibility. And the Green New Deal is another big one. All these push for renewable energy, which has been driving up the electricity rates, particularly in California, and the blackouts that we're seeing there, could become national policy. And the rise of people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez them, we would just see them given a platform as it would be actually pretty bad.
And Biden has already pledged to put us back into the Paris Accord, should he get the presidency. That would nullify anything President Trump has done there. And you brought up AOC. I mean, she has also said that she, you know, Biden was not her pick, but she believes that they could have great influence upon his administration to implement the very tentacles of the Green New Deal and go beyond that.
Well, and Kamala Harris, she was one of the ones that was an earlier signer on to this whole concept. Mm-hmm. So we could see that there could be pressure from there. It depends, of course, how able Biden is, and you never like to call into question anybody where they're at in terms of their faculties. But I would have to think more so than your average president. This person will be relying on his vice president and others around him.
Yeah, hugely. Craig, you are releasing Climate Hustle 2. Before we talk about the release itself, which you mentioned earlier, what is meant by Climate Hustle?
Well, we released this back in 2016, and the reason we called it Climate Hustle, which is this is the second iteration of that, it is because we're trying to tell the public that they've been hustled on the science, on things like hurricanes, disappearing polar bears. Polar bears are much greater number today than they were back 50 years ago, on issues like sea level rise and, on just issue after issue, some of which mm-hmm. we've talked about here. They're not being told. So we wanted to showcase those scientists from major universities to be able to say why they think that what Al Gore and Greta Thunberg and others are telling them is just simply not true. And so that's why we call it Climate Hustle 1. And we, I think, did a pretty good job. We were the number one movie for one night in America. We beat out My Big Fat Greek Wedding and also Superman versus Batman for one night anyway.
And this next number two, you are releasing online.
We are, and we were because of the success. Our first one went out in about 400 theaters back in 2016. This one was scheduled to go between 750 and 800 because of its success. But then the apocalypse happened. Back it was supposed to be out on April 21st, and as a result of the COVID lockdowns and many of the theaters going bankrupt. And now them doing the social distancing and filling them only halfway, we decided to do an online premiere, which is kind of a new thing that sprung up since then. And that'll be this, and that's where people can just go online and watch it, similar to a pay-per-view, but there'll be mm-hmm. added feature content with Kevin Sorbo from God's Not Dead. He's the one who narrates this particular version. And John Stossel from, very renowned reporter, mm-hmm. mini AOC, Mark Morano, who was the featured host of the first one and considered the most dangerous skeptic in America, according to the Greens and Media Matters. They will all be part of giving a little extra content in addition to seeing the movie. And that's this Thursday at 8 p.m. in every time zone around the world. And you can get information by going to climatehustle2.com. That's climatehustle2.com.
Okay, and that's numeric 2.
Numeric 2, exactly.
Okay, climatehustle2.com. They're releasing it online this Thursday, September 24th at 8 p.m. your local time, wherever you are. Our guest here today, Craig Rucker. Friends, let's open our phone lines today. We're talking environmental issues. We're talking about the wildfires and climate change. Are they related? That's the big question. The media today is saying, oh, definitely. And because we have science deniers in the White House, this is happening now and will continue to happen. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. Taking your questions, brief comments today. Here at Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Back in a minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Attacks continue against the Bible. Some accuse the Bible of not being historically accurate. Some insist it's a book written by man filled with error. But did you know that archaeology continues to confirm what's written in Scripture? In the fully illustrated hardcover book, Evidence for the Bible, you are introduced to the world of biblical archaeology. Using full-color pictures and an easily read format, you will see that what has been dug up from the earth confirms the places and events from Scripture. Rulers and kings are documented, battles and their outcomes are confirmed, and details of prophetic utterances are precisely what are known to have happened. This book takes you on a fascinating journey during which the traveler never knows what may turn up with the next trial. It's hard to put this book down as one captivating page leads to another. Evidence for the Bible is available for a donation of $30. Call VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Craig Recker is with us today from CFAC, Citizens for a Constructive Tomorrow. Their website, CFAC, that's the letter C, CFAC.org, CFAC.org. And also, you'll find information there about Climate Hustle, but you can also go to climatehustle2.com. That's numeric 2, climatehustle2.com. Let's go to the phone lines. Calling in from Maricopa, Arizona, we have Manny calling in. Manny, you're on the air.
Two things really quick. There was a report in Washington that went to see if that whole siege of the White House movement was taken off. It was completely empty. And the second thing I want to ask you guys, Nancy Pelosi said that she's got many options in her quiver for preventing the justice from being appointed. Any thoughts what it might be? That's it for me.
Yeah, revisit that first issue you had, Manny.
Remember they had on September the 17th had sieged the White House where it's supposed to be 50 days.
Yeah, okay, and we're really not discussing that at all here today, but the means of upsetting the Trump presidency is very much at work. The kind of doing on Occupy Wall Street outside, that kind of fizzled. It fizzled. They all of a sudden put out word that we're not going to be doing that. But certainly, Craig, and we'll be dealing more with the Supreme Court tomorrow. The Supreme Court tomorrow with Matt Staver. But I know Nancy Pelosi's talking about many, many things in her quiver here, Craig, and I guess we'll have to see what rabbit they're going to pull out of the hat.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there are a number of things, but it's nothing that I think that if the Republican will is there to pass it, they should be able to do it. They have the numbers, even in the lame duck session. So, of course, she's huffing and puffing saying this, but I'm not exactly clear what they can do about it if, indeed, the Republicans can hold their ranks.
Yeah, and again, folks, we'll hold our questions on the Supreme Court till tomorrow, and we'll be dealing more with that at that time. Let's go to Roseanne in Salina, Kansas. You're on the air, Roseanne.
Yes, hi. I just heard part of the broadcast, but I'm very interested in the DEW's directed weather and weather engineering that some and that the toxic sprays from chemtrail may create a lot of the dead vegetation because of the aluminum and the molds and everything else. But DEWs were also said to start the fires.
Okay. Any comments on that, Craig?
Well, I've looked into it a little bit. I've been unconvinced that that's entirely an issue that I know there are certain radio show hosts that are actually very big on this, and we've been invited on and talked to them. But, you know, I got to confess some ignorance as to whether or not that's actually legitimate or not, and whether or not that's something you ought to be overly alarmed about.
Okay, thanks, Roseanne. Let's go to Lee in Hartford, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Hello, Crosstalk. Hey, just a quick comment and a question. You know, when I talk to people about climate change, it's really just ridiculous how they believe these people that are pushing this man-made climate change, like the Pelosi's and the Obamas and the Al Gore's, because they leave such a tremendous quote-unquote carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, you know, their own personal carbon footprint. It's just ridiculous that people would take them serious even.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then just a quick question. I saw, you know, somebody post a photo of an iceberg, or not an iceberg, a glacier, on Facebook recently, and right below it was a picture of the same scene with the glacier gone. So I would just like you to comment on that. There's 100 years difference approximately between the two photos, and I'll just take your comment off the air because I'm driving.
Thank you for Lee. Are we losing our glaciers here, Craig?
Well, yes, the answer is yes, but this is not a new phenomenon. There's been glacial retreats. It depends on your, I guess, biblical perspective of old Earth versus young Earth, but a lot of people think that it because of the last ice age, and ever since then they've been on the retreat. This was observed by John Muir, for example, when he went out west and visited some of our what are now national parks. noting that they were retreating every year, and this is back in the late 1880s, 1890s, that he was measuring them. And so, when you see a glacier, I remember one, for example, I think it was an Al Gore's movie, where he showed a picture of the glacier in like 2005 or 6, and then he went back to like the 80s, and he went back to the 50s. He didn't go much beyond the 30s thereabouts, and the reason why is because if he would have taken a picture of that glacier from back in the turn of the century before climate change could have been, or man-made climate change, he would have seen it was retreating too. Mm-hmm. It was retreating prior to that time. The reason he focused on pretty much from the 30s onward is because that's when climate alarmists basically are telling you that glaciers are a problem. But these glaciers have been retreating well before that. What they've done is they've picked up on a natural phenomenon, something that's been going on for a long time, and now attributing it to climate change. Interestingly, too, with these glaciers, some of them, for example, they had a recent glacier in Switzerland. What they mentioned was how climate change was melting it. What they didn't mention is that underneath the glacier was found a Roman road and a Roman mine that they didn't know existed. Hmm. Similar with some glacial retreat off Greenland, they found villages and in Alaska, forests that had been covered for over 1,000 years.
Wow.
So they'll often tell you about the melting. What they won't tell you is that what they're discovering under the melting
right.
indicates that they weren't there as recent as 1,000 or 2,000 years ago.
The other issue he was bringing up was the hypocrisy of those who are alarmist as it relates to the climate, who get on their jet aircraft and fly to Paris or wherever the conference is going to be to talk about how bad climate change is. And we saw, of course, the amount of carbon footprint Al Gore would have in his mansions and so forth. And then we also hear the rhetoric about, you know, how oceans are going to swallow everything up. So why are Obamas, you know, buying property in Martha's Vineyard if they're going to be consumed by water?
Absolutely. And in fact, part of the reason we call our movie that's coming out on Thursday, Rise, it's Climate Hustle 2, Rise of the Climate Monarchy. We call them climate monarchs because they're hypocrites. They're people that have one set of rules or live like monarchs, if you would, for the common man. That is, they're telling the common man to put their temperature of their home at a certain level, to ride public transportation, to not eat red meat, and do all these things. And while they take custom jets, big yachts, and fly all over the world, and this is the Hollywood crowd, and so we expose that. In our film, we show, for example, Arnold Schwarzenegger telling everybody to air dry their clothes. And this is coming from a guy who takes a jet plane and flies up the coast to eat a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
And we have somebody like Barbara Streisand making similar proclamations, yet she flies her four little poodles to be with her, you know, thousands and thousands of miles so they can attend a show for her. And we have other ones as well, you know, Harrison Ford and of course, Leonardo DiCaprio, who is one of the big spokesmen, and he spent time on an oil yacht and flew 10,000 miles to get an environmental award, and Al Gore, who heats his home with so much electricity in 1 month that it actually outpaces what a normal family would use in a year. So these are some of the things we bring up in our film and try to expose. They are literally creating a monarchy where an elite, privileged few will not live by the rules, but they will tell us, little people, basically how we should be doing things that are environmentally or politically correct.
ClimateHustle2.com. Let's go to Dodgeville, and Jason's calling. You're on the air, Jason.
Hey, I was just calling, you know, when they call us science deniers because of the global warming issue, I like to throw it back at them because most of them deny the XXXY issue with science.
Yep, you're exactly right. We don't know whether we're male or female. Good point, Jason. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Terry. You're on the air, Terry.
Yeah, some years ago, the Wall Street Journal was the only paper that covered something saying that all the client scientists of the world met in Hilo, Hawaii, and Helsinki, and all of them said global warming is a farce. No one carried it other than the Wall Street Journal. What do you know of this meeting of all these guys 20, 25 years ago? These are the client scientists of major countries.
Yeah, the Helsinki thing, I think, was brought together by a guy named Bjorn Lomborg out of Denmark. And they did say exactly that. And He has continued that work and, in fact, just put out a book again recently called False Alarm, just this summer, and continues to get criticism for it. Bjorn is the guy who I think put this together and mentioned that, and these are coming from people who do generally, it's divided. You'll find a lot of people who are realists or skeptics of the climate change theory. You range literally between those who think man has some impact to those who think man has no impact. So I think it's a true scientific debate as to exactly how much, but the one thing they're united in is it's a minimal impact. Mm. And the cost that they came up with in that particular consensus was that for 1 year of trying to implement the Kyoto Protocol, which was what predated the Paris Agreement, you could give everybody in the entire world fresh drinking water. So they were trying to say it is not a good use of funds to try to limit carbon emissions. It's much better to mitigate and just try to adapt, much like the Netherlands did with building dikes, if in fact it's existing at a very slow rate. And it's not getting pressed for obvious reasons. The UN is the one grabbing all the press, and you got certain papers like the LA Times saying they will never publish something unless it conforms with the UN consensus.
Terry, thanks. The Wall Street Journal.
Only the Wall Street Journal carried this. No one else carried it, and it seemed like scientists from almost every country came to this.
Yeah.
And nothing, and nobody, as if it never happened.
It doesn't fit the narrative, Terry. Doesn't fit the narrative. Thank you for the call. Russell in St. Mary's, West Virginia, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to see all these people that want to do away with all the burning of all fossil fuels be made to live it before they forced on everybody else.
Yeah.
I don't think they could live like they lived back in the 1700s. They're too fancy.
I couldn't agree with you more. Funny you should mention that, but during the COVID lockdown, there was a bunch of, they call them eco-hippies, kind of, went down to, I believe it was Panama, and I had posted this at CFAC.org, and essentially they were learning indigenous people's way, saying we could do without modern conveniences, without fossil fuels. This was all possible. And for a weekend, we're trained how to live au naturel. Well, then the COVID lockdowns happened, and they actually had to do without lights, without air conditioning and all that sort of thing. And the reports coming back were pathetic, but they were kind of hysterical at the same point. They said people became very territorial. There was not the peace, love, joy, Aquarius harmony. Mm-hmm. People were stealing from each other, and they wanted to get out as quickly as possible, but they couldn't. And it became kind of like an old book I used to read called Lord of the Flies. So yes, that when that does happen on occasion, it's kind of amusing to watch that even the most enlightened liberals can't really live very well without the modern conveniences that electricity and fossil fuels bring them.
Hmm. Thank you, Russell.
Thank you.
Let's go to Rich in Burlington, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I am so glad your guest, brought up what the government has done with some of the key indicators and literally the way data is expressed. Back in 2006, I was teaching my students. I'm a retired high school science teacher, and we were talking about hurricanes. I showed them the maps from 2005 with Katrina with the surface temperatures on the Gulf of Mexico, and then I showed them 2006, and I was looking, and I said, wow, the red circles, which would indicate higher temperatures, were actually larger. And then I noticed that they'd actually changed the key because I had saved the maps from the year before,
mm-hmm.
and I had the new maps. And they had actually changed the key, the color the meaning of the colors on the map, so that the red areas were 2 degrees, actually could be 2 degrees cooler and still be in the red. If you didn't know how they changed it, and you just looked at the map, you would think, wow, the temperatures have gone up.
Rich, I'm up against a break. Back in a minute. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. This past weekend, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who sat on the U.S. Supreme Court since the 90s, being appointed by President Bill Clinton, passed away. The Bible says that God takes no pleasure in the destruction of the wicked, so we should not be celebrating her death. However, Fox News once again reveals that they are not a conservative network. One commentator after another, including Republicans, praised her for her service and her commitment to America. Yet, as we warned about her and her worldview when she was appointed by President Bill Clinton, she was a radical liberal, who actually worked with a communist front group. Roger Baldwin, a known communist, formed the ACLU. And in 1977, as an attorney for the ACLU, she argued for lowering the sex age limit to age 12. This is one of many things I could say about her.
Oh, I apologize to the last caller here as that break comes whether we're ready for it or not. And but I think we got the bulk of what he was saying here, Craig, teaching, you know, a retired science teacher. And as he was teaching, he saw, hey, there's been a change in the textbooks and they changed the key, had to make it fit their narrative. And very interesting because, you know, this is done at the expense of the young people in the classroom.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. And you know what? It's gotten kind of preposterous. There's been a lot of complaints among the scientists that we have, again, in our Climate Hustle 2 movie, mm-hmm. how the data has been changed. For example, the medieval warm period, a period of time that was around the time of the Vikings, widely known to exist because there's obviously they didn't have thermostats and, you know, the type of satellite data we have today, but they knew based on the types of grapes they grew, some of the architecture, that things were warmer back then. And today, if you look at the modern maps, and these were actually in the early IPCC documents, they showed there was a medieval warm period. They've eliminated it. It's almost like it didn't happen, or they've really made it much cooler. The same with the 1930s Dust Bowl. It's almost like it didn't happen. In order to get a graph showing that from 1880 up until present, it's just been onward and upward. In fact, the raw data often shows the 1930s and still maintains that the 1930s is actually the hottest decade of the last 100 years. The reason that doesn't fit the narrative, it predates when man would have been causing massive global warming.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, there has been a troublesome manipulation of data. You know, people thought that science would never do that, but we might be seeing some of that with the COVID lockdowns and some of the discussion there. And, you know, it is not beyond the realm of possibility. The type of modeling that has been used was very similar to climate modeling and its projections, but they've been shown to be wildly wrong, just like on the climate level, and they should be reviewed.
Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Let's go to Rome, Georgia. David, you're on the air.
Hello, Jim. Thank you for taking my call. I was just thinking something hilarious had happened quite a few years ago when climate change was just beginning to come on the scene. The countries were supposed to meet in Mexico to talk about climate change and how to do away with it, but they had to cancel because the weather was too cold.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. The Lord's sense of humor was good.
Indeed. And, Craig, thank you for that. Craig, we've seen that happen time and time again. Meetings on global climate change in D.C. or another eastern state and all of a sudden canceled due to, you know, when global warming conferences are called, you know, at that time, but canceled due to the severe winter weather coming through.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I've been to 24 of these UN climate meetings around the world, and we actually have a term for that. We call it the Gore effect. That is, wherever there's a global warming meeting, there's likely to be, you know, frigid temperatures, you know, snowstorms, things of that sort. We just humorously call it, this is the Gore effect.
The Gore effect.
Anticipate the Gore effect. You know.
Chris is calling from Tennessee. Chris, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I wanted to comment on the what the previous callers had brought up about the elites trying to push all this propaganda onto the rest of us as the peasants. That's a huge issue. That's violating the rule of law, which is what the entire U.S. legal system is built on. In addition to in the past, we've had multiple ice ages, which has come and gone. So what caused those to pass and the natural rise of temperatures? And then to tie this up, it would be, if they're concerned about us using fossil fuels, why are there about 1,000 alternative energy patents locked down under the guise of national security, which would alleviate oil usage?
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not so sure that they're against fossil fuels because you find a lot of them investing in that particular thing. It may be that they just want a carbon tax on it or something that a cap and trade emissions, almost like cigarettes. One of the worst things that could, government for all its preaching against cigarettes, one of the worst things would happen is if everybody quit because they get so much revenue.
Right.
Based on that, and I think that that's actually what the Greens are looking for, is not necessarily the phasing out, but a way to capitalize, make money, knowing that the economies are critically linked to that. And, you know, and again, I share with you in our movie, Climate Monarch, Climate Hustle 2, that we also go into that monarchy lifestyle and also the whole cost with renewable energy and the money that is poured out in research for research grants from universities, money subsidies like Solyndra and that, that go into renewable energy efforts. There's a lot of money to be made by pushing climate hype and literally nothing to be made by going against it except for ridicule and possible imprisonment.
Thank you, Chris, for your call here today. Appreciate it. And that's all the time we'll have for calls. Craig, if you can in a minute, what would life be like in the United States under the Green New Deal?
Oh, my God. Well, we got kind of a picture of it. We see places in Australia, and we see places in Europe. Electricity prices in America are about 12 cents a kilowatt hour. In Europe, they're going over 40 cents. So you'd see your utility bills quadruple, potentially. You'd see blackouts like what you're seeing. You'd see the economy suffer in terms of jobs. You'd see a lot of people not be able to drive. You would be, you know, they want to see. Actually, to be honest with you, the COVID lockdowns are considered by the environmentalists wonderful and ought to remain in place because it helps nature when there isn't all this economic activity. So if you love the COVID lockdowns and want to see them in perpetuity, the Green New Deal is your ticket.
Empty your checkbook as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. Craig Recker, our guest here today on Crosstalk. And Craig, one more time, give us the details of Climate Hustle 2 that you're releasing online this coming Thursday.
Yep, Thursday night, 8 p.m., every time zone in the world, there in Milwaukee and every other one. Go to climatehustle2.com, and you can get your ticket for the world premiere online, starring Kevin Sorbo as the narrator, to be able to talk about this important issue of climate change and how it will impact your life and the hustle that is being put on you by those who are global elites.
ClimateHustle2.com. And on your CFAC.org site, you've got, if students are looking for helpful information, writing term papers, et cetera, you've got some facts there that will help them out.
Absolutely. And ClimateDepot.com, too, which is a sister organization of CFAC.
ClimateDepot.com. Craig, thank you so much for carving out the time and joining our listeners on this topic that, you're right, it was making front page headline news, but continues to dominate as well with these wildfires and debunking their link to man-made climate change.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Stay on the line here for just a moment, if you would. Craig Recker, our guest here today, president and co-founder of CFAC, that's Citizens for a Constructive Tomorrow. Friends, thanks so much for joining us here today. But keep in mind, it's winter and summer, the snows and day and night, it's not going to cease. God promises that in His Word. Thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.